We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. T-Mobile.com.
Assessing a person's legal matter often requires extensive interviews, review of contracts and documents, and research of the current state of the law on the issues involved. As a result, the information provided by the attorneys and guests of All Things Legal is given for informational purposes only. It is not to be construed as legal, tax, investment, or other professional advice. Communications with the attorneys on this program, whether verbal or digital, do not create an attorney-client relationship.
Good morning, Doug Sinceri, Albert Nico, your weekend lawyers, All Things Legal. Happy Father's Day to all the dads out there. Happy Father's Day, Albert.
Happy Father's Day to you, Doug.
Thank you. Thank you. And we're, you give us a call at 260-1870 or text us at 870-870. We'll answer your legal question. We'll answer your sports question. And you know it's in the middle of June when the big news in sports is an obscure interview to an obscure radio station in Houston by an obscure former coach of the LSU Tigers, Les Miles. I'm throwing you a softball here.
I wish him the best. And I hope he goes to coach at Alabama.
for a long time. But as the big this time of year, you don't have Saints, you don't have LSU baseball. You should be having LSU baseball, or normally you would with the World Series. You don't have much going on. You got the U.S. Open. I want to talk about that also, about the golfers who are whining about the course.
Yeah.
But Les Miles took some veil shots at Coach Orgeron in a radio interview in Houston this week. And basically with Coach O,
he wants to be relevant again. Is that it?
Well, Coach O basically said, we've only put about 35% of our offense in during the spring. And that we haven't unloaded our arsenal yet on offense.
Right.
And basically said, so just cool out. And Coach Miles took exception to that, saying, you know, when you're a LSU football coach, you shouldn't ask for, quote, patience. And that your safety net is being the coach of LSU. And you got the most committed, hardworking, and talented players. And you shouldn't be whining about patience. And I've defended Coach Miles.
Yes, you have.
I have. I have defended him.
For what, 11 years?
I'm not saying I was a supporter of him, but I did give him credit for what he did. But I was very, very, it was a very interesting comment. And I guess he's got some angst about Coach O taking over. But it is ironic that a coach who probably go down in NCAA history is the worst clock manager, probably had the worst management of the quarterback position in the last 5 years of his tenure at LSU, being critical and probably the most conservative and unorthodox and most out of touch offensive power in football, is going to criticize Coach O about the installation of an offense.
Right.
I just find that over the top. And, you know, like I said, I didn't dump on Coach Miles. I'll let you do that. But not dump. But I thought, you know, he won a lot of games. He took over a great program and continued it for a period of time.
Right.
National championship, another loss in national championship
game.
Mm-hmm. But I'm just floored that, first of all, he would make any critical comments about the installation of an offense. And the second part is, and I'll say it, he's been out of work for 2 years. He did not get the Houston job. He did not get the Purdue job. He did not get the Ole Miss job. He did not get the Mississippi State job.
Right.
There's a reason for that.
Exactly.
Now, not to say he was good in his time, but right now, His time is apparently passed.
You know what? His time is passed. He needs to go coach some high school team somewhere if they'll have him. But it's one of those things where, you know, regardless of your abilities, if you're having some success, especially in Baton Rouge and in college towns, you're a celebrity. And so, you know, he got used to that celebrity. He got used to that salary. And then all of a sudden, you know, it gets pulled out from under you. How many years did his players save his job? You know, and that we're going to keep him another year. We're not going to, you know, not going to terminate his job, and he, you know, lose his position, et cetera, et cetera. So, yeah. And now he doesn't have that, and he had this unrealistic impression of himself as this great coach, when in fact he was a horrible coach, and everybody else in the country knew that he was a great guy. His players loved him,
and he was a great recruiter. He got the players.
He got players, but was it him or was it Ogeron getting players?
Well, he was. Ogeron, you know what I mean? Was only there a year.
I understand. Yeah, but
well, you know, actually,
and listen, when you build a program, right? What do kids want? I want to be on TV every week. I want to be in a winning program that's going to make a major bowl. That's mm-hmm. what they want. When you're out there telling them, "Hey, look, come to my school. For the last X amount of years, we've got this program that Nick Saban built." So he rides the coattails for a couple of years with Nick Saban's players, and now all of a sudden he's struggling here and there, and he's still getting good players because some players preferred his personality. Right, all right. Two big teams in the SEC.
His personality.
I don't want this Hitlerian approach to coaching that I'm not going to go be, you know, yelled at and screamed at.
Hitlerian.
Yeah.
Authoritative would probably be whatever. Better.
Whatever. But from by Nick Saban, I'm going to go to Mr. Nice Guy, who's going to be all warm and fuzzy to me, so I can have fun and do what I want to do. Right.
All
right. A la what was the quarterback that, you know, got kicked off? The kid from
Parallel.
Right. So, you know, that wouldn't have happened on a Nick Saban team. And so, but that's the kind of athlete that went there as opposed to go to, you know, so he was ending up getting good players that want to play on Sunday, but his coaching skills were horrible. His clock management skills were horrible. How wide receivers, and they're all in the NFL.
But Pro Bowls.
And how would they go to that school where we're going to run the ball 80% of the time? It's amazing to me. And so he would get players to come there, but his coaching skills were terrible. And he hadn't had a quarterback.
He mismanaged a quarterback
position. For how long?
As bad as he mismanaged
Jordan Jefferson and that whole debacle. Do we need to revisit all that?
Oh,
I mean, it's just he was terrible.
I will say this about Coach O, which he underlines. First of all, Coach O is about accountability in a short tenure. He picked the offensive coordinator, Matt Canada. He saw it was going south. He did not try to continue the bad marriage. He sucked it up. He took the financial hit and got rid of him. The second thing he did was he went through spring training this year. He saw that there was McMillan and Brennan.
Who is this?
And
Narcisse. Coach O?
Coach O. Didn't cut it. And he was in one of, you know, these were his guys, pretty much Brennan. He had to keep Brennan. He had to do a salvage job with him. He had to do a salvage job with Narcisse in the recruiting.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't cut it. And you know what? He didn't sit on his hands and say, you know what? A la Les Miles,
right,
or Brandon Harris or Anthony Jennings or anything like that. He didn't go into the fall season sitting on his hands knowing that the quarterback position was deficient. In fact, he went into the year after Parolu with a transfer quarterback from the Ivy League.
Right.
I don't even remember his name.
Exactly.
And he was a start opening day. He didn't sit on his hands. And he said, you know what? I'm going to go out in the transfer market and get the best quarterback I can. And mm-hmm. it's Joe Burrows. And he didn't care whether he hurt Miles Brennan's feelings, McMillan's feelings, or Narcisse's feelings.
You
he
know,
went out and got
you, look what, you look at why Sean Payton wins. Right?
Right.
They had Thomas and Moore just got elected to the Hall of Fame, right? Well, Thomas was not even drafted, and he ends up, they drafted a fourth-round running back that year, and he ends up starting in front of this running back, and that running back didn't make the team.
Absolutely.
So here's, you know, I'm going to play the best players, and I don't care if you know, you were my golden child, you know, top seven pick.
And then the other deficiency he saw was when the players were getting here, they were not getting coached up, especially in the wide receiver position. So what does he do? He gets, which he's been criticized for, but I think it's good. He gets 72-year-old Jerry Sullivan, who's probably one of the greatest all-time assistant coaches at the wide receiver position. Mm-hmm. You can ask Eric Martin about Jerry Sullivan.
Right.
And he brings him in and says, look, not only are we going to get the talent, we're going to coach him up. Now, whether that translates into a winning season next year, that remains to be seen.
Listen, but he's been dealt a bad hand. I mean, to come on this season.
He's probably got the hardest
schedule. No question.
One of the hardest schedules
he
in history.
He plays Alabama, Georgia, Auburn,
Florida. Texas A&M.
All of these teams are going to be in the top 25, and he's playing all of them. And it's going to be rough. He better have fun beating Southeastern this year because he's going to struggle.
And whatever happens, and I believe that the expectations are low, and he's going to exceed the expectations.
If he wins 8 games this year, he'll you know.
But one thing he does, he got rid of that sense of entitlement on that team, and he's brought accountability. He's brought accountability
certainly among what it needed.
Coaches. He brought accountability when it comes to the players, and he's saying, you know, I don't care if you're my guy or not. Mm-hmm. If you're not performing, I'm going to go find someone else who's going to do better. And so, you know, there you go. And
caller asked to talk law and not sports.
Now, you were talking before.
Yeah, I got a call. I just got a text from a friend. Is this a sports show on AM? I got a call this week. A guy, you know, I've been running some spots on WWL, Big 870, for retribution claims and claims under the New Home Warranty Act and different things like that. And the guy called me up about a New Home Warranty Act claim where he had a new home built and needed to make a claim against his contractor. And he said, look, man, he said, I will listen to y'all's show every week. I love it. He said, y'all talk law and you talk Tigers and you talk Saints.
There
he said,
go.
It's great. He said, you know, if you talk law the whole time, I'd probably, you know, turn it off after a while. But he said, y'all keep it interesting. I don't know what you're going to do.
There you go.
So we're getting it from both sides. I'm not sure.
Which means it's good. That's good.
So you know what? I got an idea. Call in with your legal question. And, of course, we will talk law. And actually, Doug, we do have a divorce question on the text. We'll take a break.
Let's take a break. And Doug Cinceri, Albert Nico, happy Father's Day to all you dads. We'll be right back after this brief timeout. We're back. Doug Cinceri, Albert Nico, your weekend lawyers. I have a good subject to transition from sports to law, which is sort of something we're dealing with right now. I don't want to say who it is and because I don't want to go on his Facebook page. But it's involving a very high-profile person. I don't even want to tell you what industry is because I just don't want to, you know.
Don't give any hints.
But I was on Newell's show this week, and the subject was social media prenups, where people are now doing prenuptial agreements saying that if you get divorced or you get divorced, that you are agreeing not to air out your divorce on social media. And, you know, what we're experiencing right now, especially for, I'm gonna leave it at high profile people because I don't want anybody going to web pages, is when a high profile person is now getting divorced, that the aggrieved spouse is going on social media and just airing out all the dirty laundry of their mm-hmm. particular lives.
Right.
And I think what we're starting to do now with the recommendations, if you're high profile and you do a prenuptial agreement, mm-hmm. we're starting to consider putting in social media restrictions mm-hmm. in case of a divorce.
Well, non-disparagement, all that kind of stuff have been around for a long time, but the medium for those disparaging statements has grown.
Well, the issue is the law is not really catching up with the technology because there's a little lag time between
it. No question.
And that, you know, if you're, let's say, a politician, you're a entertainer, you're an athlete, you're something like that.
High profile anybody, right.
And then if you...
Even if you're not, even if you're just, you know, a doctor in the community, you know, somebody who's has a reputation with a lot of patients or clients or customers...
But yeah. It's an interesting new phenomenon that's coming that's occurring. So all right, let's go to phone lines. Let's go to Joe. Joe's got a personal injury question. Hey, Joe, you and all things legal with Doug Sincere and Albert Nico.
Good morning, gentlemen, and happy Father's Day to both of you.
Thank
you,
Father's Day, Joe. Thank you, man.
You're welcome. I guess you call it the operator or the engineer that answered the phone.
Uh-huh.
I didn't have a chance to. My questions have something to do with personal injury.
Sure.
But at the same time, I'm currently going through a divorce right now, and supposed to be finalized in a couple of weeks. I do not have an attorney representing me.
Uh-oh.
Problem is. My ex, she told, and I'm not familiar with family law whatsoever. She told me that if I pay her half of the attorney fees, that her lawyer was going to represent both of us, and I found out that's not the case.
No, but you would be liable under community property to pay half the attorney's fees up until the time of the community termination of community property.
Yes, sir. Well,
in other words, you're liable by law to do that anyway.
Okay.
But she would be liable to pay half yours.
Right, if you had an attorney.
Oh, wow. Well, I did what I had to do. I paid my half and took it from there. It's just that, unfortunately, I can't afford to have an attorney right now. I'm a public school teacher, and I'm not using that as an excuse, but I just don't have the resources whatsoever. But at the same time, I have two questions about about my situation. First of all, we took out a home equity line of credit while we were married.
Uh-huh.
I gave her the house.
You donated half or all of the house to her?
The whole thing. I gave the whole house to her.
His half.
On the account of my son.
So you have no ownership of the house, as far as the donation is concerned, you didn't retain any, right?
No, sir, I did not. We agreed on that.
But you had a home equity loan that you signed off on?
That is correct.
And, so
my first question about that is when the divorce is finalized, am I still liable to pay half of the home equity line of credit, even though I donated her the house?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Well, that's no problem on there. Okay. The second question I have, and I'm not a selfish person whatsoever. Okay, but I have a pending lawsuit on personal injury.
Personal injury lawsuit's yours unless it's lost wages.
Okay, because that's what I was going to ask.
Yeah, you
am I liable to give her half of the settlement?
No, unless you have a trial, and part of that goes to past lost wages.
Correct.
But otherwise, that's the personal injury is yours.
Okay, that's what just I wanted to know. And thank you very much, Joe. Happy Father's Day again.
Thanks
you
for
too.
The call.
Thank you,
okay,
Joe.
We're going to a CBS News update. We're going to local news. We'll be back in about 4 minutes in all things legal, so stay tuned. We're back. Doug Sincere, Albert Nico, your weekend lawyers, all things legal. Give us a call at 260-1870 or text us at 870-870. All right, I ran it on Les Miles, and I think he deserved it. And because it serves no purpose to undermine LSU football at this point. And if he's going to do that quasi-maliciously or quasi, I ain't going to let that happen on Sunday mornings,
right,
at least. But I'm just going to do a little small rant about the U.S. Open. Just a little one. Golf. Because Father's Day is the U.S. Open.
Right.
And, like, for example, if you have a football game and the conditions are bad and the players complain about the field, I'm like, the weather. Everybody's playing in the same weather.
Sure.
So go compete.
Yeah, it's like going to play in Denver. Right. You're going to play in Denver.
Just compete.
The altitude's very high.
Quick client.
Yeah.
Now, the great thing about the U.S. Open is they make the course you watch all the other tournaments. You know, the winner's 20 under, 18 under, right. 25 under, and they hit birdie. But here, they make the course very, very difficult, and it just expends every ounce of golf ability that you have, every ounce of creativity, every ounce of patience, as you watched Phil Mickelson yesterday out of frustration.
Right.
And that's the beauty of the U.S. Open, is who can conquer this golf course that is made to be almost impossible to complete. And to hear, and the whining about, oh, it's unplayable, it's not fair, oh, it's just, that's what makes it the U.S. Open.
Right.
Instead of whining about it, go play it.
Right.
I know I'm sounding a little Trumpian here, but that's the beauty of it, and I just don't understand why they're going to sit and complain about it and say it's unplayable. It's the same for every player. You figure it out, and that's why you're the winner of the U.S. Open. It's the ones who don't complain, who don't whine, who go out there and play it, deal with the bad breaks, face some adversity. Instead of whining about the adversity, getting out there and figuring out how to overcome it, that's the winner. And so, I'm looking forward. I'll peek at the last round. I think it's very interesting. It's very interesting to watch the psychology where you watch these golfers in the last nine holes when they're on the leaderboard, how they respond to the mountain of winning the U.S. Open and the difficulty of the course. So that's part of Father's Day for most dads. So there you go. All right, let's go to phone lines. Let's go to Randy. He's got a question regarding boat titles, which I'll probably defer to Albert. Hey, Randy, you and all things legal with Ducks and Terry and Albert Nico.
Hey, good morning. Thank you. I bought a boat from my brother-in-law and sister-in-law, okay? They had a note on the boat,
mm-hmm.
and I gave them a check for the payoff.
Okay.
And I got the trailer title, but I cannot seem to get the boat title, and I'm getting a runaround.
From them?
Yes.
Okay.
And I'm kind of wondering, how did I get the title for the trailer if they didn't go pay the loan off?
Right, right. Yeah.
Yes.
That could be an issue because the finance company will typically hold the title until such time as the note is paid. So,
well, the people, you see, they bought it from a dealership, which I live in the Hammond area. There's also that dealership here.
Mm-hmm.
So I went up to the dealership, and the man gave me the number for the people that does all of their financing, because the boat and motor and everything was financed, okay?
Uh-huh.
So I called those people. They won't even talk to me, but I did find out. I called brother-in-law back and goes, oh, no, it was through another company, and I'll get back with you. Well, this has been 8 weeks now I've been trying to get them to produce a title on a boat that they sold me 2 years ago. And, it really wasn't no big deal, but now my numbers are outdated, and I don't want no problems with the wildlife.
I agree. So do you have a notarized bill of sale?
Yes.
Okay. Do we know who the finance company is? Can you find that out through the boat company?
Well, they told me who does their financing.
Uh-huh.
But apparently, I believe it's a company called, they're telling me, Barclay, which I don't know.
Right. So I'm wondering if you can send them a copy of your notarized bill of sale and say, listen, I just purchased this boat. I'm interested in obtaining the title. It was financed by my sister-in-law and brother-in-law.
Well,
and
that's what they're supposed to be handling.
Well, of course, but they're not doing it, and so you need to get to where you need to be. And so this will, it's 2 years later, so it might be time for you to go ahead and send that letter. And if they don't cooperate with you and say, hey, or they might tell you, that's still financed. It's not paid off.
Right. Let me ask you this. Like I said, that's the problem. I can't find out who has the title, okay?
Right.
What would be my option, say, if I contacted my local attorney over here and had him do a title search and see about obtaining it for me? Is that
There's no real title search. Right. It's not like the public records for property, real estate. It's more for, you'd have to go through the Department of Motor Vehicles, which, they're going to have to register it. But
well, the motor vehicles deal.
I'm sorry, the wildlife and fishery, as I mean, yeah.
And I have a title for the trailer. So what you're saying is kind of pretty much do what I've been doing with no avail. That's why I was calling you.
Well, right. No. I'm saying that, number one, if they told you they paid it off, well, go confirm it with the finance company that it's paid off, that, they hadn't provided me with a title. Here's my
okay.
bill of sale. I want you to send me the title. I own the boat now. And it's paid off. And he might say, no, it's not paid off. And then you've got a whole nother issue.
And what I'm trying to, not start World War III here with the family,
Well, but if they didn't pay the note off.
If they sold you a boat, they didn't own.
Well, they owned it, but they just didn't pay it off.
Felony theft to me. But,
right.
Okay, well, thank you for your advice, and you guys have a happy
Thanks, man. All right, Albert, let me ask you a quick question.
Yes, sir.
What could a person do to avoid that situation in the future?
Well, you can make sure that you write the check directly to the finance company. What's the name of the finance company? Give me the balance, right? I'll give you a notarized bill of sale for and in consideration of payment of this, this
and
finance
also
agreement.
And seeing the title before you buy the...
Well, you can't see the title because a lot of times a finance company will hold a title.
Right, or verify.
Verify, yeah. So, the finance company's holding the title. So, it's like a vehicle. They'll hold your title until such time as it's paid off. That's their security interest. So, then you get a hold of, get the name, address, all the information. The last, finance payment that they made shows what the balance is. You write a check for the balance. That you got a document that confirms what you did. And you put that company's name on the check.
Yeah, okay. Let's go to break. Before we go to break, tell me the two happiest days of a boat owner.
The day they buy it and the day they sell it.
There you go.
Yeah.
All right.
Getting to be the same thing with a camp owner, too. I'll tell you that.
That's
after,
right.
Yeah.
All right. Let's go to break. Doug Cinceri, Albert Nico, your weekend lawyers, all things legal. We'll be right back after this brief time out. We're back. Doug Cinceri, Albert Nico, your weekend lawyers, all things legal.
So it worked, Doug.
What's that?
We talked a little sports, and we started getting some calls so they'd get us to stop talking sports.
I'm going to tell you something. Even if we get calls, I'm still going to talk sports. So. All right, let's go to phone lines. Let's go to Jay. He's got a question regarding Social Security for Mom. Hey, Jay, you and all things legal with Doug Cinceri and Albert Nico.
Hey.
Oops. Ooh. That is my bad. I was too quick.
What about the second call?
No, they are you there? Yeah, just call back. I hit both numbers, and I you know what? That takes talent to disconnect two callers in one push. I mean, it takes 10 years of doing this before you develop that talent. So, but I think we had a question. Let me go to a text. It says number one. I've just been divorced. What is the legal requirement for recalculating child support? A lot more. So you have to have a change in circumstances in order to go back and recalculate child support, because if they say, look, you're too closely aligned to where you were before, we're not going to take a look at it. So let's go to Malcolm. Malcolm's got a question regarding boat title. Hey, Malcolm, you on all things legal with Doug Cinceri and Albert Nico.
Actually, it's not a question. It's a piece of information.
Oh,
there you
go.
All right. Good for it.
There is no such thing as a title to a boat. You have a title to a trailer. But the boat, I just sold one.
Mm-hmm.
You go online to the Wildlife and Fisheries, and there is a registration form, and you need a notarized bill of sale, and they will process the numbers.
What about a motor? Same thing?
I didn't have a title to that either. The only title I had was to the trailer. You do need the VIN number for the motor.
Right.
Okay. They added that in the last few years. But if you go online,
there you go.
Wildlife and Fisheries, you'll see what I'm talking about. And there is no such thing as a title to a boat.
There you go.
All right.
Bob,
thanks
much.
Appreciate it.
And also, Don Dubuque's horses are listening to us. in his barn? Because mm-hmm. Don always tells us. And I know Don knows the answer to that question, too. So if Don's listening, we welcome. All right, let's go to Cheryl's got a question. I had rudely cut her off, but unintentionally, about she has a question regarding artwork and a will. Hey, Cheryl, I'm sorry.
Hi, how are you? That's not a problem. And listen, I just want to comment real quickly. I thought it was pretty sad at the U.S. Open yesterday watching all those players complain about the weather. So
I know.
Anyway.
I know. There you go, man.
It was like a bunch of wimps or something.
That's
anyway.
Right. That's right. I hear you.
This is a question I have for you. I'm looking towards making a will. I've already done that, but I've got a great deal of original artwork that I'm worried about leaving to heirs because I'm worried about the tax implications to those that I would leave it to in a will.
How much do you think that artwork is worth collectively, along with your entire estate?
Along with the entire estate? The artwork probably worth $250,000.
Yeah.
You're okay.
Yeah. There's a federal exemption under the federal estate tax law, and there are no estate taxes. I'm assuming you're calling from Louisiana.
Yes, correct.
So you will not the federal federal exemption exceeds that by millions and millions. So you don't have to worry about any estate taxes in adding those to the will. So you might want to, either redraft the will or effect a codicil to the will that accounts for the art and any other movable property that you may not have listed in the will.
Okay, that helps tremendously. Thank you very much.
Okay, yeah. Cheryl.
Thanks for the call. Let's go to Jay on line three. He's got a Social Security question for his mom. Hey, Jay, you and all things legal with Doug Sinceri and Albert Nico.
Yeah, guys, y'all cut me off.
Sorry. Yeah, we apologize for
that. No, I'm messing with you. I was telling y'all, my dad just recently passed away. He was elderly, 93. Mom has never worked. He wouldn't allow it.
Uh-huh.
Is she entitled to, this might sound stupid, is she entitled to Social Security?
Sure.
Yeah, based on his income.
It's based on his, but it's probably smaller, huh?
Well, I mean, it's all how much you pay in. It's, there's a formula for all that. Let me ask you this question, though. Did your dad serve in the military?
Yeah.
Who did he serve?
He was a World War II veteran,
He served active duty?
Mm-hmm.
All right. Shoot. Go to a website called Aid and Attendance. Aid and Attendance.
Okay.
And it's a very little known government benefit for veterans that have served in active military duty.
And for their spouses, too,
it's to help assist their spouses. And I want to say it's up to like $2,100.
Well, it's for the spouses, it's close to about $1,100.
For $1,100.
$2,100. Okay. Aid and attendance.
Aid, A-I-D, and attendance.
Attendance, okay.
Right. Go to that website, and if you're father, mother, spouse served active duty in the military. They show you FAQs as to how do you apply and what the limits are, et cetera, et cetera. And it's been a very good resource for a lot of our listeners.
What she can, not to cut you off, uh-huh. She can get that in addition to
correct.
Some of his
yes,
correct,
yes,
correct.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Well, I pray I don't because. She can't. It's Social Security. Some of them people aren't the most helpful in the
Well,
world.
What you do is my favorite a statement at the Social Security office is, "May I see your supervisor?" Because a lot of the frontline customer service people do not have a full grasp of the total implication.
And in their defense,
and
it's very complicated.
It's very complicated.
Yeah,
so just
go up the line and talk to the person that's been there a while that's got a little bit of the institutional.
Real quick, guys. I'm a retired New Orleans cop.
Okay.
And
thank you for your service, too. We appreciate that.
It was fun. But
you might have known my brother, Philip Nico. I don't know if...
I did. I never knew him close, but I knew the name and stuff. But I turned 62 in November, and they're telling me since I get my pension from the police that I won't get. But I've been working in the private sector like for 15 years. I pay quarters and stuff. But they're telling me that I'm not going to get as much as I'm supposed to that I get in my month, the statement and stuff. Is that true?
Yeah, I think there's some sort of offset
right.
Yeah, that they do. So that way you don't get both. But again, it's based on what you paid in. So if you worked in the private sector, it's going to be a smaller amount.
Oh, okay. Yeah, some fireman told me a wolf hold act or something like that.
Yeah,
because you know you're going to opt in or out. It's a lot of state employees and municipal employees have that retirement system as opposed to the Social Security Administration. But again, if you've worked on the side and you made the minimum amount to qualify for Social Security, you would get that too, but it would be a small amount.
All right. We got to go to a break. Y'all. And thanks for your service again. Happy Father's Day. Let's go to a break. Doug Sinceri, Albert Nico, Your Weekend Lawyers, All Things Legal. We'll be right back after this brief timeout. Doug Sinceri, Albert Nico, Your Weekend Lawyers, All Things Legal. Let's go to phone lines. Got about 2 minutes before the news break. Let's go to Bob. He's got a question regarding heirs' responsibility for debts. Hey, Bob, you in All Things Legal?
Morning. My dad passed away 3 months ago, and my sisters and I are his heirs. And we're negotiating with his debtors to pay off the debt, but it's like we're going through an act of Congress, they need this, they're jumping through hoop.
Right.
Now, he does have property. We just sold one. What is our responsibility to that? Can they go after the estate if they don't want to negotiate the balance down or send us any documents?
The short answer is yes. If the debts exceed the assets, then you don't have to accept the succession. If the debts are a smaller portion of the assets, then you do have to
deal with them.
Deal with the debts. I mean, they're a credit of the estate. Now, they don't want to have to hire lawyers to go file lawsuits and do all these things to try to collect those debts through the estate. So there is an incentive for them to
negotiate.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Right. We got a few of them to negotiate down a little bit.
Right.
One of them went down to like almost half.
Yeah, that's usually their cutoff point. Keep in mind, too, they hire a lot of these third-party companies to go try to collect that money. So there's incentive for them to collect as much as they can because they get a percentage of it.
Well, my question is, and my problem is, some of them are hesitant to send me letters saying that if you send us this amount, we'll wipe out the debt, or this is what we agreed to. And I said, I'm not sending you a check for this amount unless you send me something in writing.
Well, you can put a check on their final payment in the memo, and if they cash it.
You say, endorsement of this check constitutes full and final payment on the estate of so-and-so. All right, we got to go to news. We got to go to local news, national news, local news. We'll be back in 10 minutes for second hour of All Things Legal, so stay tuned.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.